With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
Here on Reality Check Radio, it's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Lovely to have you along. Remember, you can send us a text to 2057. Email us at inbox@rallycheck.radio. Great pleasure. We've got Dr. Sarah Farrant. Have I got that right, Sarah?
You have. It's, Farrant.
I have a terrible thing with names because any odd word, I trip, my mouth can't make it. And you're the co-founder of Vital Wellbeing, and you're passion is good health, and you've put that into practice not only with your clients and the people around you, but with your family, which is, we've had that remarkable story. If anyone's interested, you should listen to the replay. It's a remarkable story what you've done with your children.
Thank you.
This morning you want to talk about fevers.
I thought we'd go there, but first I just want to say I've just finished doing the tour. We did 7 cities in 7 days with Navigating Health Outside the System, down on the bottom of the North Island. And then we just finished in Christchurch as well, doing 3 presentations over 3 days last weekend. And I wanted to give you this feedback, Rodney, because so many people came up and said, I listened to your first episode of Navigating Health Outside the System with Rodney, and he is such an amazing listener and interviewer, and we loved what you had to say. So,
isn't that great?
It's fantastic, yeah. So,
do you think some people first heard of you through RCR?
I think so, yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I really do. Yeah, I think from doing that initial one with Paul and then the last two with you and then now doing kind of our monthly series, people came to me specifically after presenting or before I started presenting and said, I heard you on Reality Check Radio, like numbers of times. So that was wonderful. That was great. Great for RCR and great for the message that I want to share.
Well, there must be a big uptick too, because I haven't been to a doctor for years, but once they said get a jab if you want to see us and put on a mask.
Doesn't make sense.
I thought, and they're busy putting hand wash on their hands, I thought, how much do these guys actually know? You know, it's like you sort of felt the curtain was pulled back a little bit. Obviously, if you, like with your son, you do a major injury and you need stitches or you break a leg or, you know, you have a heart attack, for sure. But just this idea of disease and take a pill, I'm not sure on any of that now. So I'm pleased about your tour. Is your tour finished or you got more touring to do?
More touring to do. So in April, I think it's maybe 5th, 6th, 7th, I'm at the top of the South Island. So one in Golden Bay and Nelson, Richmond, Motueka. I think it's actually in Richmond. And then I return home and then maybe 3 weeks later, May 18th in Timaru, and then follow the going south down the bottom of the South Island.
Well, and when you say bottom of the South Island, don't be so dismissive.
Yeah, and then I guess.
You come to Central Otago.
Yes, yeah. So I go down that coast and then into Dunedin, Invercargill, I think Tianau, maybe Cromwell, like that. Don't quote me on, don't hold me to this because that could quite change. But, into that middle pocket around that.
How do people find out about your next meeting?
That would be going to the website would be the best place. So vital-wellbeing.com.
Isn't it funny? It's such a significant thing when you're doing your webpage, whether you put a dash in or not, isn't it? Because in many ways it's easier to spell vital-wellbeing, but and you go to it, you think, oh, that first time. I suppose everyone can just Google vital wellbeing And unless you're put on the traitors list, you will pop up.
Well, they could just put in Dr. Sarah Farrant or Sarah Farrant.
Okay.
And they'll be able to find me.
Do you enjoy touring?
Yeah, I like it. I haven't done it for a while. I did do it a lot kind of pre-COVID, maybe even up to 2016. And then I kind of slowed down a bit. Because I was touring a lot, I was speaking a lot overseas in the States and in England and other places, and then kind of slowed down. So it's been nice to have that consolidation and not go out of the home, you know, so much. Mm. But now it's nice. You know, the kids are older and I enjoy it. Do you know what, Rodney? I love meeting the people in the communities. They're extraordinary people, and every community has a personality. That's what I love about it. And before I start my presentations, I've taken it upon myself to make sure I go around and meet everyone. So I go around, I shake their hand, and I introduce myself to them, because I want to get that sense of what their community is like and just meet the people.
How do people know that you're coming to Timaru? If I'm in Timaru, how do you reach them to tell them about you coming?
That would be through local networks. So, okay. And on my website as well. So on the website, not my website, but the business website. And social media, so on my social media, so Facebook and Instagram, our handle is @onevitalwellbeing. That's one word, actually. There's no hyphen and there's no dash in that. That would probably be the best places, through local networks. And there's a flyer for them to put up in their area if they would like to put it up. And
where do you stay when you're on the road?
Well, people have actually offered opened up their homes to us to say, hey, come and stay with us. But I'm very much when I speak, I generally don't have dinner beforehand, so I usually eat at around 3, and so I'm not in a normal kind of routine as what others will, because I don't want to be having a meal and having my body concentrate on digesting that when I'm trying to, you know, neurologically connect with my thoughts and deliver a presentation. So I tend to eat earlier. I don't eat much. Eat a little bit afterwards. We usually don't get home till around 10:30. Maybe at nighttime after a presentation, then it probably takes me a good 45 minutes to come down from that. So my schedule's all a bit off. So I generally stay like in an Airbnb, or this time it's been great because my husband has come on the road with me, whereas in the past he's never done that. So he's kind of like my driver and my food guy and my take care
of. In politics, particularly in the early days, I did a lot of hard touring and actually turned up to functions where no one came. And that was almost okay. The shocking thing is if one or two came.
Right.
You'd sort of have to do a presentation and you'd feel embarrassed for them, they'd feel embarrassed for you. But I found for me, like, you got to be up for the presentation, you know, up. And I found if I stayed with people, you sort of had to be in performance mode because they're enthusiasts for them as well. And I found I needed actually that downtime of being alone.
You really do as a presenter. I agree. I do agree.
And just, you know, pull the curtains, turn off the lights and lie there and recover a little bit, because it takes a lot out of you.
Well, interesting your thoughts on number of people coming to a presentation. I used to, decades ago when I first started speaking, I'd be really anxious about, are people going to turn up? Is there going to be people? But now I don't worry about that one iota, and it's more from the position of – my dad taught me this, Rodney. He said, take care of the people that you have. Don't worry about the people you don't have, because eventually the people you don't have will become the people you do have.
Yeah.
And so that was – if you can stay focused on – the people that you have in front of you, it doesn't matter if it's the 2 people, 8 people, 10, 20, 80 or 800 people, just take care of those people. Don't worry about the people that aren't there, because those people will go out and be your marching soldiers, and they'll tell people, and then more people will come, and it will grow naturally.
And the one or two that come can become your most fervent supporters and build from there.
Yeah.
The I found Airbnb wasn't a thing back when I was on my own touring, and I ended up always going to a motel. I hate hotels. And I always go to a motel because after a while I found I actually wanted to cook for myself, because you just get sick of food. I the idea of going to a restaurant fills me with horror. It's a funny thing, isn't it? People love to go out for dinner. And like,
no, I love making our own food,
yeah, I can't stand going, and you sit there. And I guess I don't drink.
And neither do I.
If you don't drink, you're sitting there waiting for dinner. And so you're waiting and waiting and waiting, eating the bread rolls that are coming. And then dinner comes. And it's like 5 minutes. And if you don't drink, you sort of go. It doesn't take that long to eat your meal. But when I used to drink, like, the dinner was not the point. It was the drinking and the chatting and all the rest of it. So it's a funny thing.
Mm.
Now, good on you for that. And we will come back to the webpage, but it's Vital Wellbeing. You can go vital-wellbeing.com. You can go Google Vital Wellbeing. You can Google Dr. Sarah Farrant. And you can find out about her trips and more about Sarah. But we're going to be talking this morning about fevers. What's a fever?
Yeah, so let's go there. Well, fever, if we look at, you know how I'm a bit of a word nerd, Rodney, so I love looking at, like, the actual root meanings of the word. So fever, if we look at Latin, it comes from the word febris, and febris means to warm or to heat. Now, if we look at that same word in Greek, it comes from the word pyros, and pyros means fire or burning fire. So a fever then is increased body temperature in relation to something inside of the body. And and I'm sure that we've all, you know, we've all experienced that. It's one of the ways in which we grow. So a normal temperature then, you know, is considered to be 36.4 to 37.5. So anything above that 37.5 is considered to be a fever, and then it's got different categories that you would go mild, high, et cetera. But there's generally two camps, Rodney, when it comes to fevers. So there's the camp of I'm going to step in and intervene, and then there's the camp of do nothing. So the camp of step in and intervene looks at a fever as a sign of a sickness, that the body's got it wrong in some way. And the one where it's got do nothing, or the camp where we're saying do nothing, that's looking at the body that the fever is actually a signal of health. So we've got two different camps. We're going to intervene and we're going to suppress, or we're going to do nothing and we're going to look at how, you know, why this fever is created. So I'd kind of like to go to that camp to give people a different understanding of fever. Now, most of the time now, if you go to a health professional, most people are going to say, just let the fever ride. You know, it's kind of like the common way to look at it. However, there are still people that feel that we need to, step in and we need to intervene. So that thought of the fever being a sign of a sickness comes from a position of fear, and there's medical dogma around that in terms of if you've got a high fever, we want to bring that temperature down because it's not meant to be high, as opposed to.
And that makes sense in a way, because historically people would get a fever and often die, so you'd be scared of it, wouldn't you? Because, you know, you've got some terrible sickness and you're in a fever and you're about to die. So, oh my goodness. So you can understand that thinking.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, Ronnie, because Lancet, that's one of the most respected journals, obviously, in the allopathic approach to health, they actually say that a fever is only a problem when there is a pre-existing neurological abnormality. Which you've got to go, okay, well, that's really interesting.
Well, no, I'm struggling. What's neurological abnormality?
So something is going on with your nerve system. Something is occurring with your nerve system that creates some kind of abnormality, which creates a complication to that fever. So when you, when a fever is created in the body, well, let me just say that the body temperature centers, or the center of temperature control in the body, is done by the hypothalamus. Mm-hmm. Now, the hypothalamus sits deep in your brain. So it regulates your body temperature. It also is the main link with your endocrine system. Now, your endocrine system is the system which controls your hormones. This is where it gets interesting. So you have your nerve system, which is your master communicating system of your body. The endocrine system is one part of that. So in order for us to grow, we need to have the opportunity for growth and development, right? So children in the 0 to 7 age group, and I may have shared this before with our listeners, in the 0 to 7 age group will do the most growing than they have ever done in the whole of their lifetime. They will never grow as much as what they do again in their lifetime than they do in this 0 to 7 age group. And the way in which we grow during this 0 to 7 age group is we trigger the endocrine system and the immune system, or the immune system essentially. So the fevers get created, the fever gets created by or via the endocrine system and the hypothalamus working together, right? So we increase our body temperature. We mm-hmm. then release via this endocrine system a large amount of hormones. And the hormones then are utilized in the growth and development of the child. But because we're like these little soldiers inside that are doing lots of activity to help, you know, release all of these hormones, we generate energy, we generate heat from that. So our body is naturally going to increase its core temperature as a result of all the energy that is taking place inside. That releases those hormones that the body then uses for the child's growth and development. It's a signal that the body is healthy and growth and development is underway of the child. It's a very, very different way of looking at it.
So in a child 0 to 7 having a fever
mm-hmm.
for 2 or 3 days, say,
mm-hmm.
and you keep them home because they're running a temperature, not feeling great, they're having a growth experience, a physical growth experience, and everything's coming together, it's all go, and hence they have a fever. They're not sick in any way, shape, or form. They're having what we might call, for want of a better term, a growth spurt. Wow, I never knew that.
Yeah, if we go that other tact, you know, Rodney, and we suppress that. So the other camp says the body's got it wrong. We're going to intervene. It's a sign of sickness. And remember, sick means to chase. So we end up just chasing our tail. And I'm pretty sure I've shared with you on our first episode, which was, let's say that we have a house and it's burning on fire and there's a fire alarm that gets triggered to the fire brigade that then jump in their truck and they drive around to your place and they race up your driveway. The guys and girls jump out of the fire truck and they race to the fire alarm. They cut the wires. They jump back in the truck and they drive away and they leave the house burning. So all of a sudden, when we suppress something, we may feel better, but we've not necessarily addressed the cause. Like, why did the body create this fever in the first place? And if we look at the growth and development of a child in that 0 to 7 age group, most growth they're going to do, then we can see and understand that, wow, our innate intelligence of the body through the utilization of the hypothalamus in conjunction with the endocrine system is going to increase the hormones which we use for growth and development. It's going to release more of that so that we can use that, churn up our energy inside in order for us to grow.
And that tiredness that they feel with the fever is just related to the fact that they're expending a lot of energy growing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And how long would that last?
Well, you know, I would say usually it's 7 to 14 days that we would naturally move through something. Mm-hmm. And what's so wonderful about this, you know, extraordinary about this, Rodney, and I've seen it with my own eyes, with our own kids, and also with practice members as well, is that when children and adults can move through something like a fever with trust that their body is undertaking something, that it is this signal of health, and they move through that fever naturally, which tends to break maybe, you know, it's different for everyone, but let's call it 7 to 14 days. It's usually at around day 10, through my observation at least, is that you start to notice incredible changes in your child. And those changes can be anything and everything. So can they become more dexterous? Yes. Can they grow in height? Yes. Can they choose different foods? Yes. Can they start to speak different words? Yes. Can a friend group change? Yes. Can they become more coordinated? Yes. Can they change different, want different sports? Do they ask different questions? Like, it's just incredible. Wow. Where they can go when they are able to move. And that's when, as the parent, when you are the true observer of your child, you bear witness to that growth. And it's extraordinary when you can see for yourself the changes that that take place.
And if you're in the intervention camp and the child's 6 years old and running a fever, what sort of interventions would they be contemplating?
Well, most would probably be contemplating, you know, an over-the-counter medication, which would be, paracetamol or an ibuprofen or Panadol or something like that, something that's going to suppress what the body is trying to create, which then, you know, I've mentioned before, this whole word treatment, you know, treat is to deal with and ment means mind. So we create this illusion that something is gone. It's only dealing with our mind, but our body remains on fire. So it's can be more harmful than helpful when we go to suppress something like a fever, which our innate intelligence creates for a reason, as a signal of health, in order to keep the development of the child moving forward.
Well, as parents, we typically think nothing of giving a child a paracetamol, because we get the child dosage, mm-hmm. and we get it from the chemist shop, and Junior's not feeling well, and so we read how much we're to give them, typically give it into a syringe that tastes sweet, and down it goes.
Mm.
My goodness. That's
and then there's another one.
I shudder to think how many times my kids have taken paracetamol when they've been sick.
Yeah.
I've never thought about it before, and I'm actually not a guy that takes pills.
Yeah.
How amazing. And also, I feel a bit guilty now.
No, don't feel it. No. You know, like we do.
No wonder my kids are all stunted.
Yeah. No, we do what we, you know, again, life is a journey. And as we learn new things, we implement new things, you know, like I don't feel guilty. You know, we do what we do with the knowledge that we have at the time to make the best decision. But this is all about helping to educate people to look at things in a different way. I'll give you another example, and we could probably do a whole, you know, conversation just on this piece. But just to give you this little snip, So there's lots of different ways that fevers are created. You know, there's growth and development, but there's also the creation of a fever in order to keep something sterile within the body. So when the kids are young and they have baby teeth coming through, right? We've all known that. And changes can happen in a child when teeth are coming through, from a nappy rash to redness in the cheeks to a fever. And teeth, when they're coming through for a child, scissor. They scissor in. So they go up and down, ever so slowly, ever so gently, as the tooth starts to cut the skin. But it goes slow for a reason. It doesn't just go whack and then it's up. No, for months before that tooth shows, that tooth is going up and down, like a finely tuned knife, just slowly, slowly cutting the skin. So kids during that time, as the tooth is getting closer to breaking through, they can create a fever. Now, they create a fever in those instances because, one, immunity starts in the mouth. It starts with our saliva. It starts in the mouth. So in order to keep that sterile, we create a fever, increasing our temperature to make sure that as the tooth breaks through, it's got the right environment in order for it to break through the skin. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the body is ingenious in its
ingenious
in the way in which it creates.
I never knew about that scissoring, and then that you could feel quite down, even though there's no sign of a baby tooth. And of course, kids go through, produce a lot of teeth. They've got a lot going on just in their mouth.
They've got a lot going on in that 0 to 7 age group, like a lot.
A lot. And me, unthinkingly stage these interventions, thinking that we're giving them relief because we can't stand our kids suffering because we naturally want to do something.
Yeah.
And so it's out of extreme goodness. But I get that now. What about an adult having a fever?
Same thing.
Really?
Yep, same thing.
So
don't forget, in this 0 to 7 age group where kids create the most fevers, right?
Yes.
As human beings, we'll create them mainly there because that's when the most growth is done. But that doesn't mean that going forward, adults don't create them. And again, it goes back to physical, chemical, and emotional. So how, you know, what's actually happening in the body physically, chemically, and emotionally in order to create that fever. But adults don't generally create that many fevers because we've done a lot of our growth. So it's you know, we're usually looking chemically or we're usually looking emotionally. It's what's, you know, going and taking place.
It's a funny thing, isn't it? Because we tend to have this view that, oh, the kids are okay, and then they go off to preschool and they start getting sick. But that might be completely back to front.
Well,
and
they're
not getting sick.
Yeah.
They're growing. And it's just how we attach a label to what is actually going on with our child.
Well, and it's that whole, you know, it's that whole indoctrinated system of health, right? We're so, it's our default. It's constantly our default.
And I mean, here's me. I never take a Disprin for some reason. I don't know. My mother was the same. We don't have a good tolerance for it. And so I have to be in savage pain for me to drop a Disprin or something. Like chop your head off pain, but it has never been a understanding or philosophical or principled objection. It's just been an experience. But with my kids, I wouldn't have even thought of giving them, this is crazy, I'm just doing this on the spot, I wouldn't have even thought giving them paracetamol almost as medicine. You know, it's just like what you do. The kid's unwell, in pain, complaining of a headache. Oh, I'll give them some paracetamol and they'll get a good night's sleep. And it is an unthinking response on my part. It's what you, quote, do. Oh, my goodness. But as an adult, you can also get terrifically sick. No, I rephrase that. You can also have a fever where you become delirious or semi-delirious and you feel extremely unwell. Now, typically, I would just go to bed and sweat it out, right, and rest up and trust my body, because I think that's how I've done it in the past, unless I'm really, really out of it and someone will call or will take me in to see, get help. Is that the correct approach?
Yeah,
as an adult?
I think there's a couple of things. One is, you know, let's be mindful of you know, what was written in Lancet, which is, you know, fevers are generally not of concern unless there is a neurological pre-existing abnormality. So that's what brings in the whole nerve system, right? That it's really, really important that we take care of our nerve system.
But how would I know if I get a fever?
That would usually have been there since young, Rodney. It wouldn't be something.
So what's an example of a neurological abnormality?
Well, you know, from birth, lots of children are very challenged. But right up the top, there is a vertebrae right up the top that has our relay centers of respiration, digestion, elimination, et cetera. It's like a relay race. It passes the baton right up the top. So there could be challenges from that birth process right up at that top level where that is, you know, then creating like a series of fevers. So if someone is having a consistent amount of fevers, not seizures, sorry, fevers, then we're missing something. There's something that's, okay, you know, there's not quite right. So obviously going to those health professionals that specialize in the nerve system, that's not a neurologist because we're not looking at something that's wrong, but those people like the chiropractic profession to actually look at your nerve system and make sure there is no disturbance along the pathway so that your body can mount an appropriate response, utilize the energy that is formed, utilize the hormones for your growth and development. So as adults, if we are creating fevers, then, you know, a consistent, I can't remember the last time I had a fever, like that must be over 30 something years ago. So if adults are having those consistently, then again, I would suggest that you go back and look at the neurological interference that is occurring with the body. So the body,
as well as having an adversity to pills and medications.
Yeah.
I'm also a hypochondriac. So you've only got to start describing a disease and I decide I've got it.
Right.
So now I'm thinking, I wonder if I've got a neurological. Could I have, or I would know already?
Well, I would say if everyone is not under regular care with a chiropractor, there'll be some kind of neurological challenge,
really,
in the system from, and that would be from the birth. I mean, we're going right back to a birth process, right back to in utero, if there's in utero constriction, how the baby was born, you know, physically, chemically, and emotionally, all those challenges that we have to our nerve system that changes our physiology, which changes how we adapt to our life. So if we always come from that position that we are a self-healing, self-regulating, self-regenerating, and self-maintaining organism that's constantly adapting to our environment, and that the root of that is our nerve system, which is the master communicating system, then taking care of it is going to be vitally important. And I'll probably, you know, flog this like a dead horse each month when we have our show, but because it's so important. And it means then that we can tweak our mind from looking at a fever as if the body's got it wrong, and we can start to go, wow, look at the innate intelligence of the body. and look at what it's doing. If I take care of my nerve system, then I'm going to be able to adapt to my life in a different way than what I have previously. It's a simple message, but sometimes it's very complicated for people to incorporate, because we're just not trained to think like that, right?
Mm. Where I live, there are hundreds of rabbits.
Say that again.
Where I live, there are hundreds of rabbits.
Lots of rabbits, yep.
Yeah, you can literally shoot 100 rabbits and you wouldn't know the next day, other than you've got 100 dead rabbits. Now, I used to regard them as great pests, and of course they are great pests, but they're also amazing because, I mean, it's life, and plants and animals always astonish me that how fast these rabbits can run when you're chasing them in your car, and how they can dart and miss your wheels when you, I shouldn't say that. But, you know, they don't get run over. They're extraordinary, but also they're stupid, and you can see their stupidity when you're watching them. But they're all in remarkably good health, aren't they? And you don't have a rabbit sitting around thinking, oh, I wonder if I've got a neurological abnormality, or I wonder if I need to give Junior some paracetamol. And I imagine this is how we've lived for ages. So a lot of the stuff is how we frame it and think of it in our mind.
Which so much, yeah.
A rabbit doesn't have in that same way. It's not conceptualizing disease. And it is extraordinary just to stop and think. And of course, there is a story told that in the old days, we were all getting sick and dying. And that was sort of the condition of mankind, wasn't it? But you take out the early deaths from infants, from when we've had records, and people lived a good age. And were actually physically capable and mentally alert. So our natural condition is to have our 3 score and 10, hopefully a bit more in my case, because I'm at that one. And to live it healthily without interventions. Very, very mindful. I'm just astonished by this fever, and I'm astonished by my own behavior.
And I you know, for me, Ronnie, I you know, I guess our conversations that from my point is just to help people see the extraordinary intelligence that we have in the body, that everything, I'm not a germ theorist. I never have been, ever. Mm-hmm. And for me, we have everything inside of us in order to create what we need. Everything that's inside of us exists outside of us, etc. So we are the ones that are creating our health. Health is not given to us from the outside in. It's inside of us. And the more that, you know, I can do my part to help educate people to say everything's in there. We have an innate intelligence. We have 2 eyes where they are, ears where they are, arms where they are, a mouth, a nose, digestive system, a heart, elimination system, stomach, etc. It's all there through an innate intelligence that put it all together. And the idea is to, at least for me, is to help people see that fevers, you know, and whatever else we may be talking about as we go along, that's not a sign of a sickness. It actually can be a signal of health.
And my statement earlier that people could get fevers and die in the past, I mean, I was thinking, I don't know, pneumonia, tuberculosis. I had in the back of my mind that people would get really, really sick, they'd go delirious, and then they'd pop off. And I'm thinking, that's in my mind how I thought about a fever, right? But what you're saying is not so.
And generally the common thread of working with a fever now is that you don't do anything. You make sure that your child or yourself are comfortable. I always suggest don't make them hot and don't make them cold, right? So don't put a cold press on, wrap them up and keep them warm. Let the child, and obviously when they're younger, you're going to have to be able to determine that, but room temperature is always going to be best because the hypothalamus regulates our body temperature, right? So if we put something cold on the outside of the hypothalamus is going, oh, we're cold, and it's going to burn up even higher to keep us warm. So we don't want to confuse the hypothalamus. You just want to be at a neutral, you know, room temperature, not rugged up, not cold. And then lots of hugs, you know, lots of hugs for your children. They might want to lie in bed with you. They'll just want to lay down and rest.
And they're not contagious or infectious.
No, not at all. No, because that would be going into a germ theory. That's another conversation, right?
Yeah. No, I get that now. So, oh, my goodness. Isn't this amazing? What a wonderful world we live in. And that here we are learning all the time and questioning everyday behavior that we do with our kids and how we think about things. And it's how we frame that, how we frame what we think is normal and what is usual and what is an appropriate thing. So much so without questioning it, even people like me who are incredibly skeptical. Dr. Sarah Farrant, it's always a pleasure having you along. Wonderful. You can find out more about Sarah and her trips around New Zealand for you to go and listen to this wonderful woman at her webpage, vital-wellbeing.com, or just Google Sarah or Google Vital Wellbeing. And you'll learn much about her. It's a pleasure to have you along. Oh, if anyone wants to send us a text, 2057, email me inbox@radicalcheck.radio. I, for one, am never going to look at a fever the same way. Oh, my goodness.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom by simply visiting www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.